JC Corcoran Podcast.
What's up, guys?
Hey.
If I gave you this Bud Light, are you up for whatever happens next?
Yeah, sure.
Wait, do I have to drink the Bud Light?
Yeah.
Oh, then no.
What? Why?
Because Bud Light tastes like a beer that someone already threw up.
Yeah, it's like a liquid John Mayer song.
Okay, but the thing is, like, it's all about whatever happens next, so if you could...
Yeah, but it tastes like the flat soda that a homeless guy uses to rinse off birds.
Yeah, that's exactly what it tastes like. Yeah.
Okay, look, I'm not supposed to do this, but we have hidden cameras inside of this bar, and when you get outside, there's, like, going to be this huge thing for you if you could just drink this Bud Light.
You mean the beer that tastes like water strained from a gutter full of dog's teeth?
Bud Light tastes like the scared urine of a rabbit.
It's like Steven Seagal's pre-company.
Yeah, but we have like an epic night plan for you.
Okay, listen to me very, very carefully. This is important. If a nickel could urinate, It would taste like Bud Light.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Bud Light tastes like the ghost of a dead lemon.
Basically, if water could just go bad.
We have a stretch limo waiting for you guys outside with Peyton Manning in it, and he's gonna take you to play a game of giant Jenga, okay? And then after that, you're gonna go on one of those Virgin Galactic missions into space.
That sounds amazing. I'm just not going to do it.
All right, you know what? Just let me drink it.
Okay, what does that taste like? Describe it.
It tastes like if a raccoon ejaculated carbonated vinegar inside of an old log.
That is good. Yeah. Really nice.
Bud Light, the only beer that makes you up for literally anything else.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, JC and the U-Man in the morning.
JC and the U-Man in the morning.
A U-Man of Genius quick poll. Would you pay $350 for a single concert ticket? If so, how many do you need?
Can I buy half a ticket?
The new book or pamphlet or PDF that will become a movie. 20 Minutes in the Dark with JC. By Jennifer Sparks.
Somebody help me.
Fiction featuring 14 out-of-focus extreme close-up flash shots of JC getting annihilated.
Mistaken identity.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light. It ain't a perfect night in Missouri without a little pulled pork and K-Hits 96.
It's whatever you want.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, man!
Nice job, guys.
Yeah. No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Wednesday, May 11th, 2022, 191 days remaining in our American democratic system of government, as we have known it. How you doing, kids? You are at jconline.com. We are in the top 10 of all podcasts, top 10%. Sorry, not the top 10. Top 10%. I'm 30 seconds into the podcast. I already made an egregious error. We're in the top 10% of all podcasts in this country, and we would like to keep it this way. And, you know, it's one of those things where the word of mouth is like the best possible thing. And I really do appreciate it because I know that a lot of you have spread the word on the podcast. We've been going for about a year now, and things are going really, really well. I was talking to a former St. Louis area broadcaster, a name that you would know, but I don't want to say his name. And he was complimenting me on the podcast. So even the people in the industry are like, hey, you know what? This sounds pretty good. And I'm like, very much appreciated. Very much appreciated. All right. Where do we start? With the heat or with the blues? I don't know. I think there's something domineering, and you're sort of making a statement when one of your star players pulls off a hat trick, as Vladimir Tarasenko did last night. You know, there's such a thing as getting hot when you need to get hot, and the Blues look pretty hot right now. So they can wrap this whole thing up tomorrow night at home, and then we move on, and why not? Got the possibility of breaking another record today. I feel real bad for Paul DeJong. I don't know what's going on. I mean, we saw this with Matt Carpenter, where all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, these professional baseball players who have been playing since the time they were 5 years old, all of a sudden they can't hit anymore. I mean, DeJong was hitting 130. He got sent down, so they're going to move Tommy Edman over to shortstop for now. So we'll get a lot of playing time at second base, but you got to believe the Cardinals will be looking around trying to figure out what we're going to do now. The question is, can DeJong get it back? Can he get it back down in the minor leagues? And speaking of baseball, the Cardinals lose again. This is not looking good here the last week or so, but we did have very, very exciting stuff on the field anyhow.
So you get a leadoff double here in the inning by Yadier Molina. You cannot leave him there. All right, you're in a hole right now. You need to figure out a way to get something done offensively. So for Harrison right here, two strike, time to shorten up, put something in play, make something happen. And Bader hits it out to deep left center. It's at the wall, and it's off the wall. It scoots away. Bader racing to second. Bader racing to third. He's going to score. Inside the park home run. Sliding in head first. Bader, and the Cardinals get on the board.
Obviously wasn't enough. Let's try it again, boys. Let's try it again. So right about the time, I don't know, maybe a year or so ago, I started thinking to myself, I got to back off of 24-hour news channels, and I got to back off of the internet, particularly social media. And for me, that means Facebook. I've got an Instagram account. I never use it. And I don't like Twitter at all because I don't know who I'm dealing with. You know, people are threatening me and everything. I at least want to know who the person is, okay? So you sit there and you're going, yeah, it's making me feel icky inside. And, you know, the combination of all this stuff with the war, and I'm very sympathetic. I got a Ukraine flag hanging in front of my house, okay? So this is where I am on things. But it just got to the point where I just can't watch this amount of stuff. I can watch it, but I just can't have it on all day. So I started trying to wean myself off of CNN and places like that. And while that was going, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I see way too many of these kinds of studies that talk about the mental health of people who spend too much time on social media. So maybe I ought to back off a little bit. And right about the time I decided to back off, I don't know if something, they changed their algorithms or whatever the hell it was, but they can't understand sarcasm, or if you're being facetious about something, you know, something that is clearly a joke. It's like, you know, you send me another one of those and I'm going to rip your arms off. And you end up getting suspended for 30 days because you threatened violence against somebody. And you're like, oh, for God's sakes. How many times in a month do you think you say to somebody in person something along the lines of, I'm going to kill you if you do that? Not meaning that you really intend to commit murder. It's an expression. Well, the Facebook people, the way they have this thing set up, they can't tell the difference between being serious or being facetious or something like that. So in 16 days, when I go back on social media, I think I'm just going to stop engaging. I'm not even going to make comments. I'm just going to put up something, you know, put up pictures of, like, it's like Kathleen Madigan said, I was putting up pictures of cats that look like Hitler, and that's all. And it really comes down to it. If I weren't doing some sort of radio thing, podcasting, whatever the case may be, I think I would be on social media a hell of a lot less. But you have to be omnipresent in this business. You must be omnipresent. And so I use social media to do that and to let people know what's going on with the podcast, or, you know, just to entertain people, whatever the case may be. Well, now a new study found that even taking a 1 week break from social media makes us happier. Researchers asked 150 people who use it every day to stay off it for a week, and by the end, they were less stressed, less depressed, and happier overall. Now, I don't know how you measure something like that, but apparently they did. The sad part is a lot of people couldn't even do it. They're like, you got to stay off for a week. Okay. And by Tuesday, it's like, ah, I can't. The average person still spent 21 minutes of their week on things like Facebook and TikTok, but that was 7.5 hours less than normal in a normal week for them. I used to travel a lot. I don't so much anymore, but I traveled a real lot. And one of the other things I did, and this is, we went on vacations a lot. Like I said, my next trip to Jamaica will be my 14th. I love it down there, but also, you know, been to the Bahamas and Aruba, been on a couple of cruises, you know, all that sort of stuff. Got favorite places that I like to go. And so I did a lot of that. This is when they were paying good money to be on the radio, and we were in first place, and we were getting bonus money and all that sort of stuff. And so, you know, you could spend $3,000 or $4,000 a couple of times a year because you had it. Now, radio is paying shit money, and nothing's any fun anymore doing that kind of job. But here's the thing. Especially on these trips into the Caribbean, you notice at the airport that there are people trying to show off as to how cool they are. Oh, hi, we're the Millers from Wisconsin. And I still remember we went on a trip to Mexico once. Before we even got off the ground, we're still sitting in the airport, you know, waiting to board the plane. And this goofy couple, they just started going around telling everybody that they could tell that they had met Big and Rich. Like, who the fuck is Big and Rich? And so somebody is like, oh, it's a country act. I'm like, oh, okay. Before that plane even left the ground, I think they had told everybody in the airport that they had met Big and Rich. Now we land at the other airport in Mexico. And you got to clear customs, and there's always a very long delay before they put you on one of those micro buses where they jam 75 people and 1,700 pieces of luggage into a micro bus, and they start taking you in the direction of the resort. So you're standing at the bar and you're having some drinks, and there's Mexican music playing, and everybody's happy. And these two are still like, yeah, and we met Big and Rich, and this is what they told us. I'm like, shut the fuck up with this already. But this is what I think people do. Not everybody. A lot of people are just normal people that go on vacation. But you just run into way too many of these kind of Hoosiers who do stuff like this. Well, how about this now? In a new survey, 23% of international travelers, and that would include places like the Caribbean and Mexico and stuff like that, 23% of international travelers say they've married someone they met while traveling. And 30% say they've dated somebody they met on a plane. On an average trip, travelers will make 4 new friends and gain 12 new followers on social media. 49%, half of travelers say they've taken a life-changing solo trip. And 20% say they find it easier to meet people when they're traveling alone. 66% of travelers say meeting new people while on a trip leads to a much better experience, and 77% believe meeting the local people makes the journey more rewarding and immersive. Of course, in Mexico, you don't want to get too immersive, or they're going to find your headless torso in a field somewhere. Hey, you said you wanted to lose weight on vacation. Well, we just cut your head off. Just lost 10 pounds. A little piece of Americana has slipped through our fingers. Apple discontinued the iPod yesterday, so the price of used iPods will soar on eBay for a while, and then people will realize nobody wants them anymore, which is why Apple killed them. The first iPod debuted October 23rd, 2001, and over the years, the product line included the iPod Classic, which was killed in 2014, the iPod Nano, and the iPod Shuffle, which were continued in 2017, and the iPod Mini, which was pulled in 2005. Remember all those other companies that put out some version of the iPod, and they were all so clumsy, and they didn't even look as cool, and they didn't work as well, and those things really disappeared quickly, and Apple just went to the races. The iPod Touch was the last one standing, and Apple says it'll only be available while supplies last. And even though the iPod itself is done, the relevant aspects of the iPod continue to live on in phones and other Apple products. I remember I showed my dad my first iPod, and I said, this thing will hold 1,000 songs. And he just looked at the thing like, what are you going to tell me next? There's Martians living in the backyard? And in all honesty, I can think of 1,000 songs that I never want to hear again. I'm not sure I've got 1,000 favorite songs. But you got to watch out for technology, because once people get that piece of technology in their hands, sometimes it's really difficult to get it out. Case in point. A 22-year-old guy in Kentucky is facing attempted murder charges for shooting his mother on Mother's Day after he gave her an Xbox controller as a gift and it started a fight. Luckily, her injuries were described as non-life-threatening. Happy Mother's Day, Mom! Does everybody remember a couple of months ago when you had all these QAnon people waiting at Dealey Plaza in Dallas for the return of, I think it was JFK and RFK, and I'm trying to think, somebody else too. And so you had all these people waiting because they were told by their QAnon leaders to congregate there and wait because you want to be there when this happens. It's going to be remarkable. Everybody, he's not coming? And the amazing thing about it is that time after time, these people are being told this wacky stuff, and time after time, it doesn't happen. And you'd think after a couple of times that people would go, huh, maybe this is bullshit after all. But they don't. It's like the followers are Charlie Brown, and the QAnon people are Lucy pulling the football away. How does that work? You know, if I lie to somebody or if I'm wrong enough times, people stop listening to me and they move on to something else. But with QAnon, anyhow, the QAnon queen in Canada told her followers to stop paying their taxes, utilities, and credit card bills because she declared them free. So a bunch of people did exactly that. They stopped paying their bills and they were hit with thousands of fines and had their electricity and water shut off. And I guess they got back in touch with her and they said, okay, queen, what do we do? They are still waiting to hear back. Imagine that. Oh, one more baseball thing here. We were talking about Candlestick Park and really all the ballparks in the Bay Area in San Francisco and about how they're overrated, especially the new one, Oracle Park, the one they've been in for, well, I say new, but it's like 20 years now. But anyhow, I was talking about, you know, how bad the weather conditions are. You had a game last week. You had those three games the Cardinals played with the Giants, and the sun is out. It's the first week of May, and people are wearing Arctic parkas and gloves, and even with that, they still look like they're all freezing to death out there. How can that? People keep calling that place the best ballpark, and it just pisses me off. And then I was talking about really the awful weather conditions on top of everything else, not to mention the high prices and how crowded everything is. The concessions are really, really good, but they're really expensive. So I thought that I had heard a story a long time ago about, well, in Sunday's game, I believe it was Jim Edmonds was doing the color commentary, and he's like, look, there's three flags out there, and all three flags are blowing in different directions. How can that be? That just shows you how bizarre the weather conditions are. And in fact, you'll recall in that game on Sunday, the outfielders were just having all sorts of problems tracking the fly balls. So yesterday morning I mentioned, I thought I had heard the story that goes like this. I'm going to read it to you in a second. And our buddy Ted Williams, who contributes so much to the show and has for so many years, well, he found it all right. Giants pitcher Stu Miller was called for a balk during the 1961 All-Star game that was being played at Candlestick. He describes the winds were very calm for much of the game, but he says in a 2011 interview he was not blown off the mound for a balk, but he said a strong wind gust caused him to flinch. But that's all you have to do to have a balk called on you. Any movement at all, and a flinch counts. A little football. During his 23-year career on the field, Tom Brady has made $333 million. When he's done playing, the lead analyst job for the Fox Network's football coverage will pay him $375 million over 10 years. What the hell is he still doing out there? You could quit right now. Never mind. Elon Musk says he's going to lift Donald Trump's ban if his deal to buy Twitter goes through, although I heard yesterday he's starting to flirt with the idea of not buying Twitter after all. Tell me when it's over. Bill Gates has COVID. Oh, so he's going to get his own computer chip now when they put the... Netflix says they might introduce their ad-supported tier and their crackdown on password sharing by the end of the year. Jennifer Aniston was the first guest on Ellen back in 2003. She will be the final guest on the final show on May 26th. Bobby Moynihan, who was pretty funny on Saturday Night Live for a lot of years, said Danny DeVito wasn't necessarily very happy with the impression that he used to do of him on the show and sort of attacked him, but playfully, over the whole thing. Bono, new memoir coming out this summer called Surrender, 40 Songs, One Story. Late Night Tonight, Jimmy Fallon's got Jimmy Buffett, Dana Carvey on with Kimmel, James Corden has Jessica Biel and David Spade, Ken Jeong on with Seth Meyers, and Colbert is still out with more COVID. Trailer is out for Adam Sandler's new basketball movie, Hustle. I'm going to miss that Lakers series that was, what, 6 episodes with John C. Reilly? God, the last 6 Sundays have really been fun watching that. That was really, really a great series. They should win a lot of awards for that thing. Birthdays today, Martha Quinn, original MTV VJ, is 63. Louis Farrakhan is 89. And Bob Marley died of cancer in Miami on this date back in 1981. 41 years ago, he was only 36 years old. Hillary Duff, what do we say about her? Okay, she's a little shortstop. She's a tiny little thing. I think she's something like 4'11". And when you're that short, you can't even eat a bag of chips, because otherwise you start growing wide because you've grown as high as you're going to get. So you don't want to look like a dorm fridge. And she's been on TV on one of those Disney shows for 100 years. And she's a full-grown adult female now. And I will freely admit to being a pervert, because I've been playing this on the air for a long time. She was, I don't know, 15 or 16 years old, and she does The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. And she's this little wide-eyed 15-year-old, and she's on national TV, and it's not scripted, so they're just, you know, asking her questions like they do on talk shows. Hillary had no idea what she said at the time.
Now, what kind of cars do you like? You seem like the little Honda type.
Basically, anything that has 4 wheels, yeah. But I'm obsessed with Hummers.
Oh, the big yeah. Humvee?
For sure.
The guy's like, yeah, all right, she likes Hummers. Can you imagine what that conversation sounded like between her and her manager when she came off the set of The Tonight Show that night? So there's this magazine you probably see at the checkout counter, you know, when you go to the grocery store, called Women's Health. And so yesterday, she posed nude for that magazine. She's showing quite a bit, I have to say, but it's so obvious that they airbrushed her thighs. You can't be she's 5'1". She's 5'1", and it's like they brought in industrial light and magic to trim her thighs down for the picture. And they always, you know, have some story that goes with it about, well, I just want to show who I really am, and the best way to do that is to just completely lose all my clothes. Well, if you want to show us who you really are, go ahead and do that, but don't airbrush your thighs. Let's see what you really look like. There's a lot of 5'1" women out there who are like, well, I wish I looked as good as her. Well, you do look as good as her, because your thighs are real and hers in this picture aren't. And they do that with Ashley Graham, too, who I sort of like. I think Ashley Graham has got one of the most beautiful faces for a model ever. But to call her plus-sized is, that's very polite. She's huge. Very pretty, but huge. They're always doing these stories about how brave she is to be this plus-size model and still have it out there and still showing skin. But then you can tell that those pictures have been surgically altered also. So you can't have it both ways. You can't say she's so brave for showing what she really looks like, and she takes the picture, and then somebody at the magazine comes along and says, all right, let's clean this up, get rid of all that cellulite and everything. Well, every once in a while, they show her on the runway, and that's video, okay? You can't airbrush video. Well, you can, but it gets very expensive. They're not going to do it. And you can see, especially when she turns around and you see her from behind, it's not as attractive as they would have you believe. Let's just put it that way. So, come on, which is it? But I will say, for all red-blooded American men, go ahead and punch around on the internet, and this picture of her posing for Women's Health magazine will make your day. Over the weekend, a two-hour documentary about Kennett, Missouri's own Sheryl Crow debuted on the Showtime cable network.
My friend the communist holds meetings in his RV.
So some of you know this story, and if you already do, please bear with me here because it's a good story and some people may not have heard it. We were at a radio station called The River back in the early 1990s, and it was a weird dynamic because you had the point right behind you. You had a TV station below you. These were really TV guys, and they really didn't understand radio very well, but they had some people on the point running that thing, and nobody had ever tried anything like, you know, doing a young adult alternative type station. So that station really took off. We were not as fortunate. Part of the problem was we had a broadcast tower that was already down in St. Gen, and the signal didn't cover the metropolitan area very well. And we were, you know, stuck, you know, doing a great show, but just not able to be heard. And then eventually they moved the tower, but we were already gone. But I talked about the fact that the two morning hosts across the hall from us, Mary Ellen Owens, and I forget the name of the other one. The mornings are a bitch. Sometimes you recall those ads that were in the RFT and places like that. So anyhow, they were doing really well, and we were struggling. And part of the reason we were struggling is because the guy who was the program director was here from Los Angeles, and he had a wife and kids, an entire family in L.A., but they stayed there, at least for the time being, because this guy had gotten a job running these two radio stations in St. Louis. And let's just say that the midday girl on the river was real friendly to him. And in return, while there was never anything formal, it was very, very clear that he had basically given her free rein to run our station, the river, in exchange for you know what. And she was nuts. She's absolutely crazy. Running around the station, you know, saying like, I'm trying to educate the people of St. Louis. Like, all right, sure you are, honey, sure you are. And I asked the guy, we'd come in the morning on Two for Tuesday, and there would be the playlist, and we'd be like, okay, at 8 o'clock, you play these two songs back-to-back by Michelle Schacht. And if you're saying, who the hell is that? We were just barely ahead of you on that, and I mean barely. And then there's some band called the Swinging Stakes. It was very clear to me that when you become a radio station that basically hands the keys of the station off to the record companies, and the record companies know they can get anything played on your station, there's lots of free stuff that comes along with it. A lot of free meals, trips, tour jackets, duffel bags, other stuff. I mean, just the absolute works. And the station sounded like hell. And every night these two would go back to the hotel and play Hide the Salami while the wife and the kids of the program director out in Los Angeles are sitting there completely unaware of anything, blissfully unaware of what's going on back in St. Louis. So on regular occasions, maybe once, maybe even twice a month, we would look across the hall and there was a conference room in there and some chick was in there with a guitar. And like somebody is obviously going to play guitar on one of these radio stations at some point. And sure enough, at 10 o'clock, we'd go off the air. This chick would come in, the one I was just telling you about, and they would bring this singer, this folk singer, into the studio, and she would play live. Her name was Sheryl Crow. And all we knew about her was that she was a school teacher, a music teacher somewhere in Fenton. She had a new album that had just come out, and the song that they were playing from it was called Run Baby Run. And it was an okay song. It was all right. It wasn't going to get her famous, but it was all right. And she didn't talk to us. And we're just thinking to ourselves, good luck, honey, because you seem like a real stuck-up bitch, to be honest, and you don't even say hello to people. Oh, yeah, you'll be really, really successful because you got to be outgoing in this business. You got to shake hands. You got to meet people, everything like that. And she'd come in and she'd play, and it was really sort of nondescript, and that was that. Well, a couple of months later, we leave that radio station, and right about the time we leave, somebody at the record company says, you know, this track, All I Want to Do, is pretty good. Let's release that as the single, the next single, and see how that does. And the rest is history. So she goes on, you know, to win all those Grammys, and just, I think she sold something like 50 million records in the time that she has been on the music scene, front and center. Well, We come to find out years later that the reason she didn't talk to us is because she was scared to death of us. We thought she was stuck up, and she was just very, very shy, and we came off, I guess, as being sort of intimidating. So we felt bad about that. We especially felt bad because we could have gotten to know this chick really, really well, and instead, she didn't talk to us, so we didn't talk to her, and Sheryl Crow came and went. And to this day, I haven't had a chance to meet up with Sheryl Crow again and say, hey, let me explain something here. Now, I've talked about this before, too. There is a photographer in St. Louis. And when I say a photographer, I'm talking about possibly one of the four or five most, I guess you would say, premier photographers in the St. Louis area. Because you have like portrait gals like Susie Gorman. You have guys who shoot pretty much action stuff on the sports field like Scott Rovac, really good photographer. And you got a guy by the name of Bill Greenblatt. And Bill works for UPI, United Press International. And he's been shooting. When you look out on the baseball field before the game, he's always there. If you look at the dugout, sometimes if they get a shot in the dugout, he's in the photographer's pit. And if you see a picture, an action shot, like last night, the Harrison Bader home run, Bill got a tremendous shot of Harrison Bader coming around third on the inside the park home run. And Bill's been a friend of mine for a long time. Well, he went to high school with Sheryl Crow in Kennett and went to the University of Missouri with Sheryl. And I said, well, do you still talk to her? He's like, oh, yeah. I go, how often do you talk to her? He goes, I don't know, maybe once or twice a month. I go, you still talk to Sheryl Crow once or twice a month? He's like, yeah, we're good friends. Now, truth be known, there was a period of time where I thought, and again, I was single at the time, where I thought I had a shot at Sheryl Crow. I could go into a ton of detail as to why I thought that. When I finished the story, you'd say, oh, okay, when you said it initially, I thought you were nuts. But now that you explain all that, yeah, I could see how you would come away with the idea that, you know, maybe you could have a shot. I'm serious about that, by the way. But I digress. This Showtime two-hour documentary called Sheryl is one of the greatest things of its kind I have ever seen on television. This director, whose name is Amy Scott, she just hit this thing out of the park. And the beauty of it is you don't even have to be a fan of Sheryl Crow to like this because it's so well made that if you have any respect at all for people who make documentaries, this thing will be something you'll remember for a very, very long time. Now, I messed up today because I was going to play some highlights from the thing, but I'm out of time and I got to get this thing posted. But tomorrow, I promise, I'm going to play some highlights for it. In the meantime, if you can pull it down from on demand, or it's been running since Sunday and it's still running, it ran again last night. I'm sure it's running again tonight. Let's go over to Showtime and pull this thing down and give it a whirl because it really, really is cool. And I'll find those clips for you by tomorrow and play them for you. We'll stick them into the podcast. Folks, I did my very first show at 93.7 KSD, the classic rock station, on this date back in 1987. Within a year, we were the number one radio station in St. Louis among the adult FM music stations, knocking off our previous employer. Tony La Russa had the shingles back on this date in 2011. He looked like Quasimodo. Man, did I feel bad for him. And it was on this date in 1984. I was still in Buffalo, New York, getting ready to move to St. Louis, but I was still in Buffalo, and I went to the exclusive sneak preview premiere screening thing of a movie called The Natural, which had been shot in Buffalo at War Memorial Stadium, where and I actually worked for the film company, as you know. And at the time, to be honest, I wasn't sure that the movie was going to be a hit. And I certainly didn't think that 38 years later, we'd still be talking about it. And it's one of those movies where you can be home vacuuming on a Saturday afternoon and you just pick up the remote and just figure, I'm just going to channel surf for a minute here. And The Natural is on. It's one of those movies like Ferris Bueller or The Shawshank Redemption. You just forget about the goddamn vacuum cleaner. You sit down, you pick up the movie from wherever you pick it up from, and you watch it to the end. So I wasn't sure, like I said, I wasn't sure that it was going to be a massive hit, but boy, oh boy, was it. And I got stuff I can tell you about that tomorrow, too. In the meantime, Britney Spears posted a ton of nude photos again yesterday on Instagram. Chelsea Handler said, hold my thong. And now we wait. for the response. And that's it. J.C. Corcoran podcast for Wednesday, May 11th, 2022 is in the can. 191 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. We are here every weekday morning right about this time, and we archive everything and continue, please, to spread the word. We really do appreciate it. Email me, jc@jconline.com. Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Stay cool, you fool. And in the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.